Hey, good morning. Welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. Delighted to have you with us where it's that time of year again, open season, the hunting season, not only for health insurance, but for a variety of other federal programs. And I know sometimes OPM is irked with me because I keep saying it's the health plan open season, but it is a benefits open season. But the big emphasis, of course, is on health insurance because premiums are going up 6.7% according to OPM, 7.7% according to the actual premiums for people. And that's an average. Some are more, some are less. One or two are actually cutting premiums. But you always need to shop around. The sad fact is that only about less than 6% of the people year after year change health plans. The government spends a ton of money giving people information. Many federal agencies now subscribe to Checkbook's online guide to health plans, which is a godsend for a lot of people, and it means you can also do it at work. You can do your shopping at work. But that said, despite all the publicity and help that feds get and retirees get and encouragement they get, most people do not change, and that is a mistake. And the guy that knows most about it is here today, my guest Walton Francis. He is the longtime editor of the Washington Consumer Checkbook Guide to Federal Health Plans. It's expanded this year because of the new Self Plus One option. And it's going to be available in bookstores and in drugstores, grocery stores. And again, to check to see if your federal agency subscribes to it for you online, the online version. Walt, welcome to the show.
Hi, Mike.
This is about my favorite time of year. We get to spend about 6 weeks together and then do lunch afterward and swap tales. But got a ton of emails for you already plugging the show. And start out with this one. It says... This is from Les M. I don't know if he wants his full name. He said, today's article on changing health plans hit home, and I thought I'd share a tidbit on the topic. I'm one of those who has the same health plan for countless years, Blue Cross Basic. In the past few years, I felt they were becoming complacent, or perhaps I was just tired of fighting with them regarding a class of very important and common prescriptions I take. Blue Cross would make me bounce around other documented, less effective drugs, which eventually resulted in an expensive medical test and a problem that cost me more than the original drug would have. Bottom line, he's unhappy with the thing. He is in Blue Cross Basic. That's one of the better plans. But what would you tell him?
Yeah, I think for people who have a particular medical condition requires a particular drug, all these plans have something called formularies. And they basically sometimes use the term preferred. And they give you a much better deal on generic drugs first and second on preferred name brand drugs. And then all non-preferred name brand drugs cost more. And one of the things they often encourage you to do is switch from a name brand to the generic equivalent or to a therapeutic equivalent. And I think his problem probably has to do with drugs that are in the same family, but they're not chemically identical, but they're, you know, for example, there's lots of asthma drugs, okay?
Yep.
And, you know, I think the trick that in a case like this, where you're unhappy with the drug that your plan prefers, switch, it's a straightforward answer,
yep.
Switch plans.
Yeah.
And before you switch, all the plans have websites that explain their formulary and give a list and so on, so you can check and double check that the plan you're going to sign up for is as good as the one you left, better than the one you left for your particular drug. The other general point I'd make, Blue Cross Basic is one of the better plans to be in terms of the overall cost of coverage. Out of pocket, you're going to pay for everything, not just drugs, but hospital, doctor, and so on. But there are others that are less expensive, and that includes just about all the high deductible or consumer-driven plans, any number of local HMOs, and he might want to take a look at NALC High Option, which has very good drug coverage, and actually a premium that's only $100 higher than Blue Cross Basic. So it's a slight improvement in drug coverage, and in his case, it may be a huge improvement for just about the same premium.
Well, that's good tips, and also a reminder that the NALC is the National Association of Letter Carriers plan. There is also the APWU, American Postal Workers Union, and the mail handlers plan. But you don't have to be a letter carrier, a postal employee, or anything else to get into those plans. They are excellent. They are worth looking at. And so consider that. Good answer. Here's one from Barbara. She says, oh, this is a long-term care question, which we don't have the answer to. Here's one from Brian R. He says, good morning. I've noticed for the year the federal government is offering the Self Plus One option, which has never been available before. Currently, my wife has a single plan, which covers her, and I also have one for myself. So they've got two self-onlys, I guess. We're thinking of changing to the self plus one. My wife will retire in 2 years, so she intends to suspend her plan and let me pick her up on mine. I was under the standard plan, but intended to have both of us switch to the basic self plus one. I guess that was Blue Cross Blue Shield. Can you think of any disadvantage of this? Both my wife and myself's provider are preferred providers, so unless we're out of town, our current doctors will remain. Brian R.
I got lots of reactions to that.
Yeah.
Number one, they're thinking. And they're thinking it through, and they're thinking it through pretty well.
Yeah.
A couple of points, but there's a trap or two they need to avoid.
Okay.
First, it's very important to stay in her plan as long as she's still a federal employee. That is, they should be in a family or self plus one. I'll come back to that.
Mm-hmm.
Not two self-onlys, okay?
Yeah.
Because the employed person gets to, it doesn't count as income. It's a tax preference, okay? And it's roughly a one-third saving in the cost of insurance. So retirees don't get that benefit, okay? And therefore, they should keep coverage under her having a self plus one or family option as long as possible. So, so I think maybe they're making a mistake being in two single options. I mean, I know they are.
And there's a question of deductibles too. Is that with two
self-only plans? Well, two singles expose you to a catastrophic coverage problem. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose that you're in a car accident and both of you are bunged up. If you're in two self-only plans, you will each have to pay the catastrophic maximum. In the case of, you know, number of plans, it's around $6,000. So you could be out of pocket $12,000, okay? But if you're in the family option or the self plus one option, in most plans, it's the $6,000 number or whatever it is for that
lower,
particular plan.
Certainly.
It's only half as much. Well, this is kind of a duh moment. So I think maybe you should switch to... You say she isn't going to retire for two more years. It's a bit unclear for me. Maybe you're both federal employees. We didn't get a full answer.
Yeah, true.
You're getting the preference if you're both federal employees, the tax preference. It's called premium conversion. But you still are exposed to the having to pay, you know, twice as much possibly in a serious crisis. Then you go to the question of should we be in the family option or the self plus one option? And the answer is in almost all cases, a couple will be better off in self plus one by a couple hundred bucks a year. So it's important to make that change. While you're at it, you should always be thinking about, is there a better plan where you could maybe save $1,000 or $2,000 rather than $100 or $200? But it's hard to, someone who's in... you say you intend to switch to basic. It's a lot less expensive than standard, and I think that's kind of a no-brainer change as well. So while you're at it, go ahead and switch to basic and probably into the family plan for whoever's going to be retired, employed the longest.
Okay, and here's another one along the same lines, and it's from Ken in Seaford, Virginia. Sounds like a neat place, doesn't it? Seaford, Virginia. Reading your column today, the statement, can you and your spouse save money by opting into one of the new self plus one plans rather than a traditional family plan? You might be unpleasantly surprised. Has me unsure whether I should switch to self plus one this open season. My wife and I are 65, retired, no dependents. I'm from the USPS. She's from the Virginia Retirement System, currently covered under my Blue Cross Blue Shield standard family plan and enrolled in original Medicare Part A only. We do not want Part B. What is this unpleasant surprise if I switch to self plus one? What I was saying, and that's probably my mistake, is it's a lot of people were expecting to save an awful lot of money with self plus one. And now that the premiums are out, they're very close. They're almost identical in some plans. And there's actually one where the self plus one option is more expensive than the family plan. So that's what I meant by an unpleasant surprise. But it's certainly not one to put you out of consideration.
No, in fact, there's more than one where the self plus one premium is higher. Okay. You don't want to, it's about 95% of them have a lower premium for self plus one. But
just
all.
Barely, right?
Well, a couple hundred dollars. Yeah, barely. It's not a huge amount of money compared to what you're paying in premium. You're paying thousands.
Yeah.
But so before you switch, everyone should presumptively switch to self plus one. But before you switch, double check for the plan that you're switching to that makes sure that's the cheaper. Because people are, let me just go back and explain something. If you are a family of two, whether it's a married couple or a single parent with a kid, You are allowed to choose either family coverage or Self Plus One coverage, whichever is to your advantage. And so usually it's Self Plus One, but not always. And the other thing is people think they're going to save a ton of money that way. No, they're not going to save a ton of money by switching to
either
Self Plus
One. Hold that thought if you will. We'll need to take a short break here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Be right back. Welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. I'm talking with Walton Francis. He is the longtime editor of the Washington's Consumer Checkbook Guide to Federal Health Plans. And if you want to take a look at that, go to guidetohealthplans.org, guidetohealthplans.org. And again, check to see if your federal agency subscribes to it for you. The online version is, you can really write your own ticket. Tell them who you are, what you want, what you need, and it'll direct you to some of the better health plans. Well, before we were rudely interrupted by a commercial break, you were talking about the Self Plus One thing, and that got a lot of people excited. And I remember several years ago when they were discussing the possibility of it, you said it could be good for some people, maybe a lot of people, but that way down the line, it's possible that the premiums in the Self Plus One could exceed the family plans depending on who goes into it.
And indeed, that happened, and it may happen even further a year or two from now.
Down the road.
Let's focus on this year's open season.
Sure.
A couple extra points. There are several plans. I mean, I said most Self Plus Ones will only save you a couple hundred bucks a year. There are a couple where it'll save you $1,000 or more in lower premium.
Now you're talking.
And so I want to mention to people a couple of plans that are sort of winners in the Self Plus One sweepstakes this year. The Care First Standard option has shot, an HMO, has shot up to near the top of our rankings because for Self Plus One, because its Self Plus One premium is so low. And the new, and the not the new, the Care First High Deductible plan also is a great deal in Self Plus One. And in addition, has added a new Medicare wraparound benefit. And we'll talk about that later. But for people on Medicare with Parts A and B, Care First High Deductible is among the very best choices. But yeah, so you don't want to just willy-nilly say, I'm switching to Self Plus One. In most cases, it's a saving, but there are a few plans where it's not.
Yeah.
So that's one of the little small thing on your checklist, but do check it.
Okay, very good. And let's see, here's one from, be careful not to give these names, from Janice. And she says, I'm a CSRS retired annuitant and will be signing up for Medicare A and B in 2016. Do you know if a final decision has been made on what the new Medicare Part B premium will be?
Mike, here's your chance for some breaking news.
Okay.
Okay. Last night, around 6 p.m., the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services announced the new Part B premiums for next year. They finally got them all figured out. It's a complicated thing. They have to have the actuaries do the calculations and so on. So we know what the premiums will be for Part B next year. Now, just to remind people, if you're in Part B having it deducted from your Social Security check already, if you're already in that situation, which probably three-fourths of all federal annuitants are, your premium stays the same, $104.90 a month, okay, next year. It's all – so. You know, close your ears for the rest of this conversation or this part of the conversation. For those of you who are about to join Part B, okay, such as Janice, you're going to pay a higher premium. And in almost all cases, it'll be $121.80 a month. And that's a blip above, you know, that's a couple hundred bucks a year more than the people who are held harmless with this grandfathered lower premium are. But it's only a one-year penalty. And the premiums will sort of merge, get close to, if not identical, a year from now. All this has to do with there was no cost of living increase this year because there was a big reduction in energy prices due to the gas, you know, et cetera. Okay, skipping all the intermediate details. So the bottom line is go ahead and join Medicare Part B. But my suggestion is put it off to the last moment. So, for example, I believe, don't hold me to this, check with Social Security Office, you have at least 3 months, and I think it's 8 months, before you actually have to sign up for Part B to avoid paying a penalty for late enrollment.
Oh, I see,
So you might want to put it off so you don't pay too many months of the higher premium. On the other hand, at an extra, you know, $15 a month. It's not a break the bank thing to say, oh, heck, I'll just go ahead and get all my stuff in order at the same time.
Now, and would you against the difference between Part A and Part B?
Yeah, Part A is the hospital part. It's free in the sense that you don't have to pay any premium. Everybody, pretty much everybody should join it at age 65. If you're still employed and you're in a high deductible plan, there's a disadvantage because you're not able to make extra contributions to your health savings account. Put that footnote aside. There aren't many people mm-hmm. who have yet discovered how good high deductible health plans are. But for most people, just when you're retired at age 65, you just sign up for Part A. The big optional question is, do you sign up for the doctor part of Medicare, Part B, where you actually have to pay this monthly premium we're talking about? And let me just finish the thought about next year's premiums. There is a minority of people who will pay a much higher premium. If you are a high-income retiree with annual income, and this is the adjusted gross income number on your tax return, from 2 years ago, of over $85,000 for a single person, or $170,000 for a married couple filing jointly, you will have to pay a higher premium, and it can be a lot higher. There are some people who will have to pay $390 a month, okay? More than three times what everyone else is paying, what most other people are paying. So, and for you, it's not at all clear. In fact, it's pretty clear. It's not a sound financial proposition to sign up for Part B because you pay so much in premium for so little extra in savings. That said, you know, people have to make individual choices on that issue. But anyway, back to Janice. So if you've already made a decision, you're going to sign up for Part B, that's fine. Just don't be in a real rush to do it. But your premium increase will not be out of sight.
Okay, so she's in really good shape. Well, there are 30 plus plans and options, and that's a lot more than most people in the private sector have. And while it's a good deal for people to have that variety of choices, it's also a daunting task to look at those. So obviously, they should buy your book and or see if their agency subscribed, or heaven forbid, pay for it themselves. What would it cost me to sign up for your online
service?
You know,
I'm embarrassed to say I don't know. I think it's $10.95.
Yeah,
I keep forgetting to check.
Right, it won't break the bank.
But I want to be clear, that's for the, there's a paper book that's the same price as the online version. The online version is better because we can cover more situations in more detail. And let me tell you the key thing we do, whichever mm-hmm. way you look at it. It turns out, and there's a lot of research on this, people aren't very good at comparing health plans. It's too complicated a problem because you look at two plans side by side, even two plans. One of them will have a higher deductible than the other. One will have copays. The other will have coinsurance. One will have a different out-of-pocket maximum. Weighing all those factors in your head simultaneously is computationally impossible for mm-hmm. a normal human being. Even I can't do it. My computer does it. Okay. Yeah.
And it takes you months to figure these out.
Oh, yeah.
You've been doing it for...
It's taken me years to get it, get it right. And we're always improving our estimates, actually. Every year we tweak it to mm-hmm. get it fine. Okay. So what we do and what we offer people is we will compare not just two plans side by side, but all 30-plus plans available in the D.C. metro area, mm-hmm. and it's over two dozen anywhere in the United States. We actually calculate for each plan what are you likely to spend... Under that plan, you know, plan mm-hmm. A compared to plans B, C, D, E, F, and G, et cetera, for both premium and likely out-of-pocket expenses under that plan's benefit structure. And we take into account your pay system, your age, your health condition, your family size. I mean, a whole bunch of variables, and we throw them in the computer. We, you know, stir them up a little bit, and out pops a baked tart, which is your answer. And what we are... what our ratings of the plan show in dollar terms, we're not just, you know, we're telling you at a dollar number that in plan A, you and your family are likely to be spending $3,000 next year. And in plan B, it'll be $3,500. And in plan C, it'll be $4,000. And the bottom line of this is that almost everybody can save hundreds of dollars. And many people who haven't made a really prudent choice can save several thousand dollars by changing plans this open season. And this is like giving yourself a pay raise. I mean, it's just Why wouldn't you switch to a better deal plan if it could save you a couple of $1,000?
Well, this is a really good time of a work time for me because this open season lasts about 6 weeks. I have your book. I talked to David Snell at National Active Retired Federal Employees about retiree situations. But the column almost writes itself. It's a very useful column. It may not be Gone with the Wind material, but it's extremely useful to people. As you said, somebody can easily save $1,000 or $2,000 next year. And that's not chump change. And there's so many variables to this. The thing I like about your book and the online version, as you were saying, if you can picture this, if you're listening to the show, it shows Blue Cross Blue Shield Standard, Blue Cross Blue Shield Basic, GEHA, APW, whatever you have it, and it shows the premium, and that's a given. Everybody's going to pay that. And it says if you have a 6% chance of incurring certain obligations, and it shows you what that is. You have an average, which I guess is the best one to work with, and then you have the worst case scenario, as you pointed out, the couple that's in a car crash or a catastrophic illness or something, and that's the worst case scenario. But it's the total out of pocket you're likely to pay next year, and extremely useful.
Yeah, and it turns out that the plans vary considerably in how well they stack up. It's not necessarily because of some plans are run better than others, though that is the case. Mm-hmm. It's mainly a function of who's enrolled in them. And if a plan disproportionately attracts older and sicker people who cost a lot more, then its premium is going to be higher than some other plan that mostly attracts sweet young things who just came to work for the federal government. So the trick for you older and sicker people is join the plan to young
get in there and take
get a better deal.
Well, and that's the beauty of a group plan is it does take care of different people's different needs at different times of their career and their life. You know, you're having kids, you're not having kids, you're empty nester.
And the other thing we do, and I recommend people obviously take into account, is you and your family have particular health needs. It may be we talked earlier about a particular prescription drug you may be taking. It could be that you need a hearing aid. It could be you're going to have a baby next year. There's a whole lot of circumstances that vary from plan to plan. And both we and OPM, I want to be clear, OPM has a website, and it doesn't cost you that $10.95. Mm-hmm. They don't do the dollar comparison we do, but they do the other kinds of comparisons, most of them that we do, including, for example, the ability to figure out which plans offer more days of skilled nursing coverage, et cetera. Now, there are some things we compare that no one else compares, like the hearing aid benefit or the paternity benefit. But, you know, if and most of us do have particular health needs, then there's a little bit of homework you should do. And you don't need to view it as, oh, my God, I'm going to have to read 100-page brochures for each of 30-plus plans. That's, 3,000 pages of torture reading.
Oh, yeah.
No, you don't have to do that. There are decision aids you can find that will simplify your choices and keep your brochure checking down to maybe just one or two brochures and not all 100 pages, but just a few key pages. Like, how does the plan change this year? And by the way, that's for people who think they're in the plan they want to be in. How do you know it hasn't changed adversely?
Yeah. And as you point out, your doctor may have forgotten to tell you that he or she's not going to be in the network next year. You know, this is complicated stuff. So go to your primary physician and say, hey, you are going to be in X
plan. And let me just say, in the D.C. metro area, mm-hmm. one of the things our online guide does that we really can't do in print, we actually let you enter the name or names of doctors you want to keep. You want to be in a plan that they're in the network of, and out pop our results after you've answered mm-hmm. a half dozen questions, including the name of the doctor, which we make really, and wham, you will see which plans are good buys and which plans have your doctors in them. And if you have any luck, there will be some plans that are both, and those are the plans you should consider first. Obviously, mm-hmm. they're, for you, the better plan.
I know prescription drugs vary greatly, and after the break, I want to ask you about some of the best plans for prescription drugs. Be right back here on federalnewsradio.com. Hey, Mike Causey here. Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking to Walton Francis. He's the editor, longtime editor, and of the Washington Consumer Checkbook's Guide to Federal Health Plans. And it gets better every year because they have an online version now, and many federal agencies subscribe to it. So be sure and check that out. And we're going to have Walton back for several more shows dealing this. And since I botched the word prescription so badly in the last segment, we're both now afraid to say it. So we're just going to say drugs, but you know. We're talking about prescription drugs. Walt, I know you're very high on high deductible HD plans. How come?
Because they're such good deals. They typically have low premiums. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So you got upfront savings of a couple $1,000 maybe that in for sure expense that you know you're going to make that saving. Like all the plans, they give you a free annual physical. So, you know, you're not, you know, trying to count every penny in terms of at least the first basic health encounter. They all have a savings account of one form or another. The true high deductible plans have what's called an HSA, health savings account, and it's like an IRA on steroids. The money goes in tax-free. You invest it while it's in your account tax-free. And you can take it out tax-free, and it's your personally owned money, okay? And you can grow it every, you know, year after year if your healthcare costs are low. But if your healthcare costs are high, you use some of that money, okay? Pay for your care. Then, and if your costs get too high, you face a deductible, and it's a big deductible. Mm-hmm. It may be $1,000 or more for a family. It'll be typically $1,500 or $2,000. Okay, and then regular insurance kicks in, and all these plans have good catastrophic coverage. So what they're doing are creating a set of incentives that reward people who keep their health care costs low, okay, but take care of you if they get really high. And if your health care costs are in between, you're going to lose most of that couple $1,000 premium saving you started the year with, but you still are likely to be roughly equal as if you had joined one of the more traditional plans. There's a variant of this called consumer-driven, which has what's called an HRA account, and it's not personally owned, but they're almost equally advantageous, okay? And these accounts roll over, okay? So if you don't use it this year, you can use it next, and so on. And
if you never use it, cash it in tax-free and keep it, huh?
Yeah. Okay. Well, you don't just cash it in, but once you're supposed to use it for healthcare expenses.
Oh.
But once you retire, okay, you actually have minimal penalty or none if you use it even for non-healthcare expenses. But everyone's going to have some healthcare expenses sooner or later in their life. So it suffices for that. Now, the HSA accounts and the high deductible plans are personally owned. And if you change plans in open season, for example, you keep the account. It goes with you, okay? The consumer-driven plans, the HRA account, is not your personal property. So you're sort of in that plan for the duration if you choose mm-hmm. to switch plans. People seem, in the private sector generally, something like one-third of all employees in the Fortune 500, et cetera, mm-hmm. world are now in high deductible plans, okay? And mm-hmm. companies vary in how much they help by putting money into your savings account and so on, okay? But they're in a high deductible plan. In the federal employees program, the high deductible plans are there. They're being offered. There's a half dozen good national ones. GEHA offers one. Mail Handlers offers one that's good. In the D.C. area, Care First offers an excellent buy in them. I mean, there's just a bunch. The Aetna Health Fund has two, a consumer-driven and a high deductible. Only a few percent of federal employees have joined them, and it's a mistake. There's this reputation, which is incorrect, that they're only good for young, mm-hmm. low-cost people. No, that's not true. They're good for people. They even, as you near retirement age, they allow you to make extra tax-protected contributions to your health savings account. Or if you get hit by a truck, you can add, in a bad year for medical expenses, you can add tax-protected money to your account, thereby protecting you from paying as much out of pocket. And tax preferred is huge. Tax preferred is like a one-third discount.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not trivial.
Well, armchair psychologists are always saying that federal workers are more conservative than the general population. Maybe there's some truth
this
to
sure
it.
Proves it, yeah, I'll tell you. Yeah. Or maybe they're just not paying attention. They're watching Redskins games
instead, they've got so many choices. You know, there's so if you had five choices, it's one thing, but having 30 is overwhelming for just about anybody.
But if you think about it, you have over 30, but if you use, for example, our online guide, or maybe it's a question of which plans your doctor is in, use some criterion that makes sense to you, you can narrow your choice down to two or three plans with a few minutes of thought.
Yeah.
Now it becomes a much simpler task to figure out, of these two or three, which is most advantageous to me and my family.
Yeah. Okay, now when you and I started doing this back in the Garfield administration, you had HMOs and you had fee-for-service plans. And HMOs, of course, are localized, and fee-for-service are national or worldwide in some cases. But they've kind of become alike, haven't they?
They have. It's very interesting, and it's one of the reasons healthcare costs haven't gone up even faster than they have.
Mm-hmm.
Every plan in the FESGP now has a preferred provider network, and in every plan, it's a better deal by far, usually, to use a preferred provider than to use some doctor who's out of network.
Mm-hmm.
And so now that was sort of one of the disadvantages of HMOs previously. You had to use the doctors in their network. Well, now that's, you know, the HMOs still usually penalize you. If you go out of network, you pay it all out of pocket. But in the national fee-for-service plans, you're going to probably pay half out of pocket if you're not staying in network. So the answer is stay in network. Okay, and worry less about what kind of plan it is, and much more about if it matters to you, is your doctor in the network? So, and it often matters. So make your choice, let that drive part of your choice. Usually, most doctors are in multiple networks, okay? It's not hard to find a plan with your doc in the network in most cases. Now, the other point I'll make about high deductible plans, let's say you're going to a psychiatrist who is not in the network of any plan. A lot of mental health professionals aren't in networks, okay? And you really want to use that psychiatrist, but it could be any doctor for any purpose.
Yeah.
You in a high deductible plan, you can use your health savings account to pay for your visits to that physician. And of course, by the way, there's always the option of paying out of pocket. I know that's a dreadful thought.
Yeah.
But if you could save $2,000 in premium by joining Plan A instead of Plan B and pay $400 a year to go two visits to Doc Sawbones, who you just have to see twice a year for your rheumatism or something, okay, pay it out of pocket. So you're paying him $400, you're saving $2,000 in premium, you're still $1,600 ahead. But the high deductible plans and consumer-driven plans make it a lot easier and less expensive to make that out-of-network choice.
Okay. Prescription drugs, very important to some people. Others don't care at all about it. If it's important to you, is there a preferred group of health plans in the federal program that if you have heavy prescription drug costs, you should look into these plans?
Yeah, there are, but it turns out to be most of them.
Really?
It is almost universal. A couple of exceptions I'll mention in a second. If you're using a generic drug, okay, you're going to pay $10, $15, $5. You know, in some cases, free out of pocket. It's negligible cost. If you're using a name brand drug, the great majority of the plans will charge you $30 or $35 for a 30-day prescription. Okay, and these same plans in almost every case let you get a 90-day version, mail order, for about half the price. Okay, and that's pretty standard. I mean, it's the way. Okay, but if you don't use a preferred name brand drug, you can pay a lot more. So for people who have a lot of expensive name brand drugs, you need to check the plan formulary to see if your drugs are in the formulary of Plan A versus Plan B. It's much less important whether you're paying $30 or $35 a month for it, but the point is you want the plan to give you that preferred rate. There are a couple of exceptions to this. Some of the plans don't charge a dollar copay for drugs. They charge a percentage.
Mm-hmm.
And if the plan says you pay 25% of the cost, well, what if it's a $500 a month drug? Okay, now you're paying $125 out of pocket instead of 30. So if your drug costs are high, it's generally smart to not join those plans. There's an interesting, but you need to be careful of thinking about this because a lot depends on what your drug utilization is. And most of us don't take a lot of high-cost prescription drugs. Let me give you an example. The GEHA standard option, which is one of the plans we rate highest overall. It's a very low premium. It has very good coverage of doctor and hospital costs. It charges you 50% of the cost of name brand drugs. Well, if you're taking three or four expensive name brand drugs, that's not a good plan to be in. But if you're not taking those drugs, it's a wonderful plan to be in. So do be a little bit prudent about this, but and certainly be prudent about it and check formularies if you have particular expensive name brand drugs.
Got another question about prescription drugs, but we need to take a break here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Mike Causey here, talking with Walton Francis, the longtime editor of the Washington Consumer Checkbook Guide to Federal Health Plans. It's going to be on the newsstand soon. Your federal agency may subscribe to the online version, which is absolutely superb, and it costs a whopping like $11. So you, even if your agency doesn't subscribe, you can probably part with that kind of money. Very helpful in making a selection this year, and this is a very important year to shop. So we were talking. Oh, this is probably a really dumb question, but as a layman, you have a name brand drug, then the patent expires or whatever you call it, and then anybody can make it. And I would assume it's the same drug, whether it's the real McCoy or it's a generic, given the way the FDA investigates these things.
The generic version is required by the Food and Drug Administration to be therapeutically identical to the name brand that went off patent. And there's occasional controversy about, maybe they have a different filler ingredient or something. And some people say, I can't take the generic. Yeah. I got to take the name brand. Well, I'm going to tell you something. You can do that. I'm skeptical of those claims that there's any difference at all. But, if you insist on taking the name brand after there's a generic version out there, the health plans will charge you a lot more. Yep. They'll charge you for a non-preferred name brand. They want you to take the generics.
Yeah.
And, this is a big – Lipitor has for many decades been the most popular drug in a group called statins, which keep your cholesterol low, okay? Lipitor went off patent a couple of years ago, and my drugstore was for a while advertising free Lipitor.
Wow.
Because the generic version was so inexpensive that they in effect said, we'll just give it to you if you're taking it. And I have seen zero scientific evidence or literature of any kind suggesting that generic Lipitor is inferior to name brand Lipitor.
Good deal. Question here from Vicki in Woodbridge. She's a retiree, and she said, been in an HMO for years. What am I missing? All of this hype about, and she says, Blue Cross Blue Shield. What is the downside to an HMO, if any?
There's not a whole lot of downside to the HMO. Mm-hmm. The biggest change let me say there's two kinds of HMOs. And the Kaiser plans and a few others around the country, but not many, are true group plans in the sense that the doctors they use are actually their employees. Okay, it's a fair,
And so, it's one-stop shopping, too.
And it's one-stop shopping. Yeah. And there's pros and cons for going down the Kaiser road.
Right.
I can't tell you how many people I know who have been in Kaiser plans their whole life and swear by that model. Zero paperwork, zero muss, zero fuss. Kaiser wants to keep you healthy because that keeps their costs down and their
maintenance.
They take
high.
The long run view.
Yeah.
The other HMOs, the much more common kind, are not this staff model kind. They also have an interest in keeping you healthy, but people tend not to be lifetime members, so to speak. They also use a closed panel of doctors, a network, but it's much bigger than the Kaiser network. And Kaiser's not even a network, and they're okay. PPOs have typically these days a pretty big network of preferred providers. But if you go out of network, if you go to a doctor who's not a member of their network, then you will pay the full price. Okay, there's no subsidy. The national plans, the preferred provider networks that are not HMOs, will often pay roughly half the price if you go out of network. So that's the big difference. The other difference I'd focus on is HMOs tend to minimize paperwork, okay?
Yep.
And if you don't like that kind of hassle, the HMO is a big advantage over most traditional health insurance plans.
Right, and I, as you said, and I like that idea, they want you to stay healthy, so they go for exams.
I'm not sure what she means by Blue Cross controversy.
She said all the hype about Blue Cross.
I don't know hype. I mean, you know, it's the most. There are two Blue Cross popular plans.
Yeah,
and there are also plans called Care First mm-hmm. that are run by the Maryland Blue Cross. There's a lot of different Blue mm-hmm. Crosses. Okay, and for you know, the Blue Cross Standard is the single most popular plan, and it's really not standard. It's high, and it's very pricey, and it's one of the half dozen plans we suggest to people. Hey, if you're in that plan, this is really important for you to think about joining a less expensive plan, okay, including most HMOs and Blue Cross Basic. And by the way, in the HMO group, I'd say that the standard option Care First HMO is a great buy. And now there's a Blue Cross high deductible plan, the Care First high deductible plan, another great buy.
Now, is that, you said of Maryland, is that available to people in Virginia?
Metro area, okay.
Another question. I know you and I run into people all the time who are going to retire, and they obviously want to take their federal health insurance into retirement with them because it's such a good deal. So many options, so many plans, and the government pays the lion's share of the premium. They discover they can't. Because of the five-year rule. What is that?
It's a scary thing, the five-year rule.
1 minute to tell the five-minute rule.
You have to be continuously enrolled in some FEHPP plan, not the same one, or TRICARE for the 5 years before you retire in order not to lose coverage the day you retire. So it's a really important thing for people. There's a gotcha here. And even if your spouse has coverage, you got to be in the FEHPP.
In the private sector. Okay, very good. Walt, thank you very much for being here. We're going to keep doing this till we get it right. And remember, it pays to shop around. Have a good week. We'll see you here next Wednesday.